The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Friday, Gary, it's the bonus show. How are you?
I'm doing good.
All right.
Done with mulching, so.
Are you?
Yes.
Were you supposed to be mulching?
I did the last couple of days. And, you know, when you mulch, I don't care how many bags of mulch you get, you never have enough the first time.
No, I ordered 900 one time, and I was still short by 900.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I have no idea.
Why is it that it looks a lot, when you load your, you know, I have a truck. I can load the bed of my truck going, oh, this is, I'm going to have too much. I'll have to share it with my neighbors. That's never the case. I have no idea.
No, last year.
It looks much bigger when in the bag.
Last year, I had 8 bags of mulch that did the front lawn. I bought 9.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were like 3 for $11, the mulch I get. So I said, okay, I'll get 9 instead of 8.
Mm.
You never know. An extra bag of mulch never hurts.
That was my grandmother's dying words.
An extra bag of mulch never hurts.
Yeah, and then boom, she was gone.
Right along with Make America Great Again.
Yes. She said that right before the mulch thing.
An extra bag of mulch never hurts.
That's right.
And so I got 9 bags, and I was like, Now, you can't tell from looking at it. If you look at my front lawn, you say, oh, wow, it looks really great. I mean, there's mulch around the trees. There's mulch everywhere. It looks great. Mm-hmm. But in the hidden areas that you can't initially see, back behind the bushes, and I was telling somebody about my mulching problems, and they said, what do you care if nobody can't see it? And I said, because I know.
Yeah. You should get a hobby.
Yeah, I have.
You might mulching. You might take up golf. You might take up more golf.
You know, I had mentioned Make America Great Again, and I just the president was when he was speaking had a rally yesterday and was saying it's going to be easy. We've got so much winning, it's going to be easy to come up with a new campaign slogan 2 years from now, from Make America Great Again to Keep America Great. Again.
Steve Byrne, the comedian, when was this? Earlier today, he tweeted, he's got a picture of President Trump with the 3 Americans who returned to the States that were being held prisoner in North Korea. So he's got the picture of the president and those 3 men. And Steve Byrne writes, I rescued these guys from fake Asia. We're off to celebrate at P.F. Chang's. Steve is a stand-up comedian.
Yes. And he's been on the show before.
Yes.
And he's been concerned with the Fed for a long time. He sneaks that in once in a while.
Yeah,
his comedy routine. And I caught him on it. Mm-hmm. I said, you got a problem with the Fed, don't you? And this goes back, what? During the Obama administration, even.
Oh, yeah, before, yeah.
You know,
yeah, right. Yeah.
With the, as we've always said, when the accusation, I'll never forget the accusation in 2012 when it, you know, from, you know, came from Mitt Romney, and it was, the Chinese are manipulating their currency. So are we.
Yes. Yeah. Don't look now, but
so are we.
Yeah.
and that was at that time with all the Fed stuff and all that is when Steve would put it into his comedy act. You know, I was just thinking, though, that, you know, we don't take politics personally.
Mm.
We don't practice political idolatry. So it doesn't matter if the liberal who we disagree with the most comes up with the slogan that is an effective slogan. It doesn't bother us. We look at the substance of the idea and say, you can come up with the slogan all you want.
Mm-hmm.
Does the substance back it up? When Obama was elected twice, we some people, you know, would call us, see what? Our guy won. What did you win? What did you win in the substance of the actual ideas? It's all we care about. So we don't take it personally. Hope and change didn't upset us. We analyzed it, but it didn't upset us. What I get the biggest kick out of, it drives the left crazy. Two things. When he says, make America great again, where he said, then keep America great again. And it was yesterday, I just saw on social media, the left blew up when he was, when it was saying again, you know, because of after the Iran thing. And I don't know who said it, but I saw it a bunch of conservatives posting it. I just can't stand. There's just so much winning going on, so much winning. And that drives the left nuts.
Yeah.
And I just, we're in a time in our history where slogans, basically, you know, we can, you have a significant number of people that basically analyze what's going on in America by the slogans on each side.
Yeah.
And they get furious right. about it. I mean, just, and it's like, don't, you know, I don't care if it's the worst liberal out there with the slogan. It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't get me angry. We'll analyze it and tell you why it isn't true. But I just saw it yesterday. It said, can you stand all this winning? And a friend of mine put it on social media, mm-hmm. and just the liberals just went crazy.
Well, it was, obviously, the
whole thing was staged. By the way, I'm adding that a little bit of that in, the mm-hmm. hesitation, the pause, the mm-hmm. little bit of the stuttering, and that's the fact that that's the rage that you could see as they were trying to gather their thoughts with some type of substance, and it was about the hostages being released. It was absolutely choreographed. You could tell that was staged. It was staged.
Yeah, the NBC reporter, and she goes on to say, Trump was a reality show star. And I thought to myself, on your network. For your parent company. Because this was, and we set it off the air yesterday. I mean, it was clear during the show that because this kind of news, was going to clearly make it happening just a few hours before morning drive and morning television. There was going to be, of course, they were going to use a lot of that. I thought it was a great celebration for those three men. Politically, yeah, it works for the president.
He got something done.
So they had to go crazy. You have to do the story. But then it was a matter of time, and really it only took a minute or two, relatively speaking, for them to, you know, go off on, no, this was staged. And someone made the brilliant point, if it was really staged, they would have delayed the flight a few hours and had them land live during the morning shows. Because think about that. We followed it, and right. the event itself, between the vice president and his wife showing up to the end, which was the president and those three men talking, you know, to the media. I don't know. That thing was at least the better part of an hour, you know. And so when you look at that entire thing, if that had happened during, if he wanted to stage something, delay the flight, have him circle for a few hours.
Well, no, I would disagree with that because that's his normal waking hours.
Exactly. That is morning drive for him. The president gets up really early. But that's if he really wanted that. Now, but instead, what did they do? I mean, they did the story and they moved on. If that were a live event, I don't know that they would have covered the entire thing live. But certainly it would have been a lot longer of a story because it would have been playing out. Once it's done and they have the recording of the landing and the men waving and the president and everything else, the liberal media can, you know, whittle that down and edit it down to, you know, the appropriate 5 seconds. Oh, and the president brought home three men from North Korea. Let's take a look at the weather. I think that it was inevitable that was going to happen. They, you know, of course, nothing from any other former president ever been staged during their presidency.
Well, you know, we
ever
no Bergdahl wasn't,
no.
Was he? But even look, until we found out what happened in Bergdahl and the optics of Obama with his parents there.
Right.
I mean, those were, and we said at the time, those are great political optics, but what happened to, is it fell apart extremely quickly when you found out, you know, what Bo Bergdahl was actually about. I mean, that fell apart within very quickly within a, if memory serves me correct, within a day.
Right.
You know, the question started coming up as to, whoa, who, you know, who is this? You know, who is this guy? What did we give up for him? Whoa, you don't do that. You do not trade somebody who is a deserter for five leaders of your enemy. It just, you know, that it isn't done. And the way that he portrayed it again was disingenuous. But the optics, forget about that. The optics itself of Obama there with the parents next to him, initially, those were great optics.
Mm-hmm.
It's always great when you do when a president does something like this, whether they're Democrat or Republican, it is great optics for the presidency. And as we said, you know, if you're not looking at it from a biased way, I hate Trump or I love Trump no matter what, if you're just looking at it, you say, those are great optics.
Right.
If you're somebody just an independent out there and you have no feeling towards a president, you say, good job. The other thing is you can take the two, the Iran deal and this, because that was the other thing I heard yesterday from Democrats. We even talked about it on the air. Well, those people should have never been over there in the first place. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we agree that if you go over to North Korea, that's bad. But this is the beginning of the negotiations to denuclearize North Korea, which is why it's so critically important. You know, as a new story, and that with the Iran deal was, you think about it, and we're not talking about the people that absolutely love Trump no matter what, or the people that absolutely hate Trump no matter what. We're talking about everybody in the middle there, which is a huge portion of the country that says this is good.
Well, I just thought it was just a very keen observation by that NBC reporter that Donald Trump did something for publicity. She should get an award for that. Very good. Very good work.
And he's the first politician to ever.
A president something and brought cameras. And then the next day, he's shutting us out. Well, which is it? Do you want to be there or not?
We've got a great show ahead.
If the president had said, you think about that. If the president had said, I don't want any media at the airport. They would have called, I don't know who's on today's show now. It's not Katie Couric, right? Okay, whatever. Whoever's on the, let's go live and sit right outside that airport, right outside that Andrews. Let's go out there and take everything. They would have swarmed it.
I am taking credentials away from the entire country. We're closing down the joint base at Andrews. Nobody can see what's happening.
Right. We don't want anyone to bring any cameras to this. That's against our First Amendment rights. He invites the media, and he's only doing this to be on TV.
There would be the conspiracy theories. There really were no hostages.
Exactly.
He's making it all up.
Exactly right.
So no matter what, he's not going to win. But that's the whole point. It was a great, as I said last night, it was a great 48 hours for the president with the Iran. Not for the Democrats and not for the people that dislike him, but for politically for the great middle. It showed what a significant portion of America believes has been lacking in this country.
Right.
And that is strong leadership on foreign policy and the projection of American power, stating we don't make bad deals.
Right.
We're not going to make bad deals. Now, we'll see what kind of deal he makes.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm talking about in this 48 hours, it was great.
Mm-hmm.
It has been great political theater, and I don't say that. I'm not saying that in a sarcastic way at all. It was great optics and great political theater for this president.
Sure.
And I believe helped him tremendously.
I think so.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Did the FBI spy on the Trump campaign? And we're not talking about after the FISA warrants. This is really Kimberly Strassel again in the Wall Street Journal. Mm. And we talked about the Wall Street Journal editorial yesterday where they say they know who this source is. They believe they know who the source is, as we told you, and yesterday Devin Nunes and Trey Gowdy got the briefing from the Department of Justice. But what the question now being asked is, they believe, and this goes back to the whole thing. Remember when you had Devin Nunes come out and say that no intelligence agencies were involved whatsoever in starting this Trump investigation? And that was looking at the fact that the Democrats have claimed that it was George Papadopoulos talking to an Australian representative in Great Britain who was talking about the fact that, you know, there's emails out there or whatever on Hillary Clinton that, you know, can be exposed or whatever, that started this investigation. That's what they're claiming. And it was very important to find out, okay, well, where did that information come from? How did anybody know that Papadopoulos was talking to an Australian representative at some party drunk? How would that ever get back and start an investigation if there wasn't a foreign intelligence agency that heard it?
Right.
And what the thought is. And the question is, was there an American? Because they say that it's an American, but it's an American who's based overseas. So they're starting to connect the dots and saying, was there an American based overseas who was part of the Trump campaign, or an American who was just overseas with Papadopoulos, who was part of the Trump campaign, who was working as a spy for the FBI, basically a mole inside of the Trump campaign, working for the FBI way before the Papadopoulos thing, which they claim started the FBI investigation, happened.
Whoa. Well, and who would have created that assignment, right?
Yes, exactly.
Where would that come from?
Well, because they say it started with Papadopoulos. Well, then right. It wouldn't have if they had a paid informant inside of the Trump campaign. They were doing an investigation.
And what would that be based on? Got to be based on some kind of reasonable suspicion of criminal activity by someone in the campaign.
Why would you have somebody in there?
Right. Somebody has to send them. Somebody with in authority, with a high level position, has to put that agent, that spy, in place. Well,
there it is, right there. About the FBI source, did the Bureau engage in outright spying against the 2016 Trump campaign? And is that why they were so passionate in trying to avoid this coming out into the public?
For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
Snowmelt is fueling moderate to major river flooding in northern Washington and western Montana for at least the next few days. Other parts of the northern Rockies could experience snowmelt flooding as well. Over the next 7 days, a wet pattern continues for the Midwest. Iowa, Illinois, Ohio will see over an inch of rain for the week ahead. The southern third of the nation will be mainly dry, with the exception of Florida, where afternoon thunderstorms will abound. As we wrap up the last day of the work week, we will see patchy showers in Los Angeles, high today 70. If you'll be traveling in or out of Las Vegas or in the I-15 area, you'll want to be aware of a forecast for blowing dust today. It'll be breezy with 35-mile-an-hour winds. High today in Vegas, 93. Dallas will be windy, not quite that strong. High today, 90. Chicago, thunderstorms, 57. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
The Bonus Show.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RUD-EYE. I want to read just a couple of sentences here from Kimberly Strassel's column in the Wall Street Journal from last night that has to be, I mean, I there are some stories that come out in the Wall Street Journal editorial from last night's show, which would have been on, that would have been Wednesday. They came out and said they believe they know who the source is. And this goes back to Rod, the deputy assistant attorney general, mm-hmm. last week, right. stating that he was, this was extortion going on by Congress, and we can't let this out. And we went, what the heck's going on here?
Right.
Congress doesn't extort. Mm-hmm. Congress is the people's representative. You don't get to hide stuff. And remember, they were claiming that this was of national security and all this, and lives could be put in danger. And how dare they try to extort this from the Department of Justice? Well, then apparently a couple of days ago, we don't know the exact timeline because we know they wrote the story 2 days ago, but the Washington Post story, again, coming out and stating the fact in the source story that sources say this would be extremely damaging and everything else, and would put national security in peril, possibly this particular agent informant could put their life in danger and all this. And as people that are a lot closer to this and the Beltway than we are, sat there and said, well, with all this source story coming out, we think we know who this agent is. That the release of it had to be leaked, they believe, from somebody who was friendly with the Department of Justice because it was taking their side. And they were able to sort of figure out, and Kimberly Strassel will read it here in a minute, and the Wall Street Journal editors yesterday said, we think we know who it is. We think we know who this yeah. person is. And so the Department of Justice, or whoever is friendly with the Department of Justice, or wishes their side to be promoted over the side of Devin Nunes and Congress, the sourced information they put out is what has led many in the media to be able to identify, or they believe they have identified, who this agent is, who the Department of Justice said absolutely has to be kept top secret. And that's where we ended yesterday.
Well, and you add to that the Deputy AG, Rod Rosenstein, was on a trip and actually cut that trip short to come back and meet. And they had this meeting on Tuesday. As you mentioned, Gary, we don't know the timeline as to when, if the story was being written. We know when at the Post was, when they put it on their website. We know, we can see the timestamp, but we don't know when the leak happened, if it happened right. before that meeting or after right. that meeting, because either way, you could look at it and the leak, regardless of the timing, I guess, is suspicious in its own right. Who would have done that, and what kind of leverage did they think they were going to get? Or if the leak had already happened, is that why the meeting came together so quickly?
They knew that the leak had happened, and the Wall Street Journal
was working on the story.
The Washington Post was calling different people,
right?
So they knew that they were under the story at that
right.
particular point.
And they could—is
that what happened?
And they could figure out the Wall Street Journal figured out. Look, they're going to know who it is.
And she writes, the fact that the Department of Justice lost the battle when Devin Nunes and Trey Gowdy were allowed to see whatever the top secret information. And she writes, even without the official confirmation of that source's name, the news so far holds some stunning implications. Among those, the Justice Department and the FBI outright hid critical information from a congressional investigation. In a Thursday press conference, Speaker Paul Ryan bluntly noted that Intelligence Chairman Devin Nunes' request for details on this secret source was wholly appropriate, completely within the scope of the committee's long-running FBI investigation, and something that should have been answered a while ago. Translation, the department knew full well that it should have turned over this material to congressional investigators last year.
Yeah.
But instead deliberately concealed it. House investigators nonetheless sniffed out a name. And Mr. Nunes in recent weeks issued a letter and a subpoena demanding more details. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein's response was to double down, accusing the House of extortion. And if you remember our rant on that last week, excuse me, that what bothered me was how he responded.
Because extortion is a crime. Right. It reeked of some kind of desperation for some reason.
Right.
So that was just really odd, we thought, and out of line.
Exactly. He accused the House of extortion and delivered a speech in which he claimed that declining to open the FBI files to review is a constitutional duty. Justice then asked the White House to back its Stonewall, and it even began spinning the daddy of all super spook arguments, revealing any detail about this particular asset would result in the loss of human lives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is desperation, and it strongly suggests that whatever is in these files is going to prove very uncomfortable to the FBI. The Bureau has already some explaining to do. Thanks to the Washington Post's unnamed law enforcement leakers, we know Mr. Nunes' request deals with the top secret intelligence source of the FBI and CIA, who is a U.S. citizen and who was involved in the Russia collusion probe. When government agencies refer to sources, they mean people who appear to be average citizens but use their professions or contacts to spy for the agency. Ergo, we might take this to mean that the FBI secretly had a person on the payroll or used his or her non-FBI credentials to interact in some capacity with the Trump campaign. This would amount to spying and would be hugely disconcerting. It would also be a major escalation from the electronic surveillance we already knew about, which was bad enough. Obama political appointees apparently unmasked Trump campaign officials to monitor their conversations while the FBI played dirty with its surveillance warrants against Carter Page, failing to tell the FISA court and that its supporting information came from the Hillary Clinton campaign. Now we find it may have also been rolling out human intelligence to infiltrate the Trump campaign, which would lead to another big question for the FBI. The Bureau has been doggedly sticking with its story that a tip in July 2016 about the drunken ramblings of George Papadopoulos, a low-level volunteer for the Trump campaign, launched its counterintelligence probe. Still, the players in this affair, the FBI, former director Jim Comey, the Steele dossier authors, have been suspiciously vague on the key moments leading up to that launch date. When precisely was the Steele dossier delivered to the FBI? When precisely did the Papadopoulos information come in? And to that point, when precisely was this human source operating? Because if it was prior to that infamous Papadopoulos tip, then the FBI's not being straight. It would mean the Bureau was spying on the Trump campaign prior to that moment, and that in turn would mean that the FBI has been spurred to act on the basis of something other than a junior campaign aide's loose lips.
Wow.
We also know that among the Justice Department's stated reasons for not complying with Nunes was its worries that it might do damage to international relationship. This suggests a source, maybe overseas, have ties to foreign intelligence or both. That's notable given the highly suspicious role foreigners have played in this escapade. It was an Australian diplomat who reported the Papadopoulos conversation. Dossier author Christopher Steele is British, used to work for MI16, and retains ties to that spy agency, as well as to the network of former spooks. It was a former British diplomat who tipped off John McCain to the dossier. How this top secret, quote, top secret source fits into the puzzle could matter deeply. I believe I know the name of the informant.
Wow.
She says, Kimberly Strassel, the editors of the Wall Street Journal said that last night.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But my intelligence sources did not provide it to me, and I refuse to confirm it. It would therefore be irresponsible to publish it. But what is clear is that we've barely scratched the surface of the FBI's 2016 behavior, and the country will never get it straight until President Trump moves to declassify everything possible. It's time to rip off the Band-Aid.
Yeah, I'd call it more of a body cast.
Well, if she...
Because, I mean, this whole thing...
And here's my point. If she knows it...
Right.
If she believes she knows who it is, and the Wall Street Journal editors believe that they know who it is...
It's only a matter of time.
It's only a matter of time because it comes out, but they also know if they know... Because what they're saying is this just scratches the surface. Well, then that means that name means something to you. And if you say it only scratches the surface, you obviously are looking down other paths.
Right.
That I don't know exist yet because I don't know if those paths come from you knowing the name of who this informant is, if you believe you know who it is.
Hmm. Yeah.
Wow. It's
disturbing.
By the way, this can't be a movie. It would have to be a series. Not a major series, because it would have to be a major series because of miniseries.
No, it's going to have to go on for many seasons, and we've said this, you know, so you're going to have Andrew McCarthy and Ms. Strassel, probably they're going to have to be the two main writers of this entire thing. And it's going to have to go, it would have to go on for years. Because every scenario would be that's played out. I don't know how many episodes you could get out of each little scenario of how they built this case, what the case was based on. Why did you have an informant? Based on what?
Based on what?
What was the idea?
And where does... what's really getting me is, where does she think this is taking us?
Right.
Because if she believes she knows the informant, then you can sit there and say, okay, this is what I believe happened. If this only scratches the surface of it, let's say... I mean, scratches the surface to me means this is only 10% of it.
Right.
Well, again, does this go back to the whole FISA warrants and the Obama administration's abuse of FISA warrants,
which went
going
back
way,
to 2011?
Does this take us back to the original thing that Rand Paul was concerned with, that people were monitoring what he was doing?
Right.
Is this what she means? Scratches the surface that the Obama administration was actively involved in monitoring more than just the Trump campaign?
Right.
That it really had nothing to do with Russian collusion? Is this where she's going? That the Russian collusion is what they decided to use later on in the campaign?
Right. He wasn't if you go back into this case, he wasn't the nominee. You know, when you go back, I mean, deep into this case, the question is, then what were you doing? And the next question is, who else might they have had surveillance on? Would it be every campaign, all of them in the primary, all 17 or however many Republicans were there at that time? Because you just have to assume any one of them or just do the probabilities thing. So you would include, I don't know, who? Ben Carson, Jeb Bush, Trump.
Because when you say this just scratches the surface, what you're saying is, you believe there was more surveillance,
right?
Because where else do you go? If that was it and it was just this one guy, well, then you've just taken it to that point and you can say they were just going after the Trump campaign. But if this scratches the surface, are you saying that what we have seen in the Obama campaign, you know, when it came, or the Obama administration, when it came to unmasking, when it came to surveillance, was much more widespread and just not on Donald Trump?
And what about that asset? What about that spy in the campaign? What were they getting out of it?
Yep. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. You know, I was just telling you the way this is going. It's almost as if in Watergate, it was the Democrats that were attempting to bug the Democrat National Committee headquarters and blame it on Nixon.
Right.
I mean, that's the kind of, when you think about this, Stormy Daniels is nothing compared to the path that we're going down here.
Well, and it's interesting how everything seems to be falling, you know, into place or coming together on one front this week. The fact that the deputy AG came back from a trip in order to make that meeting on Tuesday, the fact that then that story gets leaked, and we don't know when the leak happened to the Post. We know when the Post put their story up. And then Wall Street Journal, over the last couple of days, basically putting this puzzle together. And it really, and then pointing to spying on the campaign? Based on what? Who gave the authority for anyone to do that?
This has to be the biggest guessing game going on in Washington, D.C. right now that nobody is talking about publicly except for the Wall Street Journal.
Right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here. We're going to drive ourselves crazy.
I know.
Because we have to. This is like doing a Rubik's Cube or something like that. We're sitting here trying to guess who could it possibly be. The source at Kimberly Strassel, and then the editors of the Wall Street Journal also say that they believe they know who the informant is. Outside of intelligence sources, they've been able to figure it out from apparently the Wall Street, or excuse me, they say that the source story mm-hmm. helped them, help them put the puzzle together. But she claims other sources outside the intelligence community is how she knows. But since intelligence, her contacts in the intelligence community won't confirm it for her, she will not come out with that name. Now, you and I were just throwing stuff back and forth, and this goes to the story of over the last couple of weeks where Devin Nunes has wanted this new information, which initially was said to be about FISA warrant abuses.
Mm-hmm.
And a new path that they were going down. And according to the Wall Street Journal, they got a name. And they wanted to verify whether this name was, involved in it. And then we were told that it was a informant who had worked for the FBI, or who had worked as an informant for the FBI, long-term FBI informant. And this name just, could not be released because lives would be at stake. And we've gone through this whole thing, mm-hmm. and the deputy mm-hmm. attorney general came out and said, you can't, extortion from Congress isn't permitted and all this. And it was getting crazy to the point of, what are they trying to hide? Because, of course, Congress can get this information. They're the elected representatives of the people. And the House Intelligence and Judiciary Committee, they have absolute right to see these. As a bureaucrat, you don't get to hide it. So we're like, what are they trying to hide? And now what's coming out from the Wall Street Journal editorial, Kimberly Strassel, over the last week or so in her articles, and then finally with the one that she released last night about that FBI source, is the interest in whether the FBI actually had a spy inside of the Trump campaign, mm-hmm. and whether it even was before the Papadopoulos story came out.
Right.
And maybe even before Russian collusion was even a topic of discussion. You and I have talked about long term means for years, which means this is a person who's been a source and worked on other cases for you. And I started thinking, because I had said, well, maybe this was the person who heard Papadopoulos, talk to the Australian diplomat
mm-hmm.
when, he was drunk and apparently talking about the emails and Hillary Clinton and all that. And then I thought to myself, well, wait a minute. No, the FBI has a source. That source isn't going to be hanging around overseas, some low-level volunteer.
They're not going to be following or sitting around. They're not going to worry what Papadopoulos has to say. You're going to follow. You're going to be, and you're going to have access to
right. So
somebody that's higher up in the campaign.
So if the name was just Joe Smith, would anybody care? Is this and this is the question you have to ask. Is this a name that was so high up in the campaign that it would send shockwaves everywhere?
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, you and I said that you had both Trey Gowdy and Devin Nunes pretty tight-lipped when they came out yesterday, really didn't give any indication whatsoever. And I know he was asked a question yesterday, Mike Pence, but this is when Mike Pence, the vice president, came out and said, this has to end.
Yeah.
And so if this is top secret, they went to the White House with it. Does the president already know? And was it a member that he knows high up in his campaign? And that's why he is so confident. Look, we're not just taking a conspiracy theory out of thin air. All the questions that you and I were asking a year ago, Eric, ended up being the questions ended up being the answers.
Well, because if you look at Kimberly Strassel, you know, basically saying that really how this has to end is that the president needs to declassify everything possible so it can be seen, so the American people can know the truth. Because if this was going on with the Trump campaign, how many other campaigns might have had spies or paid informants or whatever?
And if it was a long-time informant, for what? What other cases?
Based on what other cases?
So was this...
Were they political in nature?
Was this somebody who has worked you for a long time, who you use, who you said, okay, you're going in? And so if you were doing this and said you're going into the Trump campaign, was it before July of 2016?
Well, and you
was
can't,
it before?
And you don't just walk in and start and become a member of the Trump campaign for showing up. You have to earn a place in that campaign. You have to get hired into that campaign.
Well, to be high up,
yes.
To be able to find anything of substance.
Right.
Because
to get access.
And that's why I thought, okay, that first thing that I came up with, the first thing about, well, maybe he was the one that heard pop it up. Well, no, because he wouldn't have been, if the FBI is going to put a source in there.
Right.
Unless their goal was just to destroy the campaign any way they could, unless the goal was not truly to get Donald Trump on collusion, because they knew there was no evidence of it, unless the whole thing was political to begin with. The goal was to get dirt. That getting the dirt was more important than actually prosecuting Donald Trump, that the FBI investigation was never about prosecuting Donald Trump for possibly colluding with the Russians to hack the election, but it was about getting information that they could use to destroy the campaign. That the prosecution was never a thought. It was just get the dirt, and that was the role of the FBI.
And then he won.
And then he won.
Which means he has access to all of that classified information.
Yeah.
Because of the scrambling. I mean, if you go back to what Evelyn Farkas was saying, remember that TV appearance where she said, well, look, we wanted to get it out and get it to the as late as what did she say, January 2017, before Inauguration Day? We wanted to get this information out to, you know, to our friends on the Hill.
And the information was just the information in the dossier, which the FBI knew wasn't verified.
Right.
Because Comey said it.
Yes. But that reeks of, again, that desperation. Okay, we were going to discredit the candidate. Now we have to discredit the president because he won.
Right. So what if the goal was never truly an investigation to prosecute the president, but just get as much dirt to destroy the campaign, and then afterwards destroy the legitimacy of the election? What if it was never about criminal justice? What if it was only about politics and destroying the opposition? And getting that information was easier through the FBI.
Right.
Through those sources.
Right.
It was never about oh, let's see if Trump really colluded with the Russians, because they knew they never had any solid information that he did. They were just trying to get anything that they could throw out there as dirt.
Right. Discredit. Poke holes in the campaign. Now discredit the president after he won. And how do you do that? And then who steps up? Well, Comey gets fired, runs to his friend. Rosenstein assigns special counsel, which has produced what on the president? Nothing.
Nothing.
Still better not, part of
nothing.
A year.
We still don't know what the crime was. So that is that where it's leading when she says scratches the surface, that this was never about, that when you actually get down to it, it was never about prosecuting the president, because they don't, today we still don't have a specific allegation or crime. These are seasoned investigators. They know.
Well, because, and think about this too, because those in position of authority at the FBI, and we already know the Peter Strzok situation and everything else, we know political activism was very much alive under the Comey leadership at the FBI, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now when you extrapolate all that out, you list someone as a paid informant. Are they really a paid informant? Are they just your political operative listed on paper as a paid informant? And it has nothing to do with any crime.
Yeah, that actually it wasn't an investigation. Your job was to
right.
get dirt.
Wow.
I know.
Because, I mean, what crime would you be investigating? And based on what suspicion or what event that brought about suspicion or anything else, and how would that justify a paid informant or an informant, a spy inside the campaign?
And was the paid informant just happened to be working for the Trump campaign, or was the paid informant actually put in as a spy?
Right. Did they approach somebody in the campaign and get
them
because
to do
if
it?
You're talking
right.
long-term informant, well, that doesn't sound like they just approached somebody in the campaign, unless they were otherwise an informant on other cases and had been
right.
before.
Or was it an informant that they used to join the Trump campaign and then to find dirt?
Right.
Wow.
To know for just one second what Kimberly Strassel knows about this person. She says she believes she knows who it is. But her intelligence sources cannot confirm it, and she's not going to release the name because it would be irresponsible. You can't do that.
Even though I'm looking for it all over the internet.
Oh, are you kidding me? I'm curious as the day is long.
I have to be honest. We came out of the top of the hour, and it's like, oh, we're doing a show. I'm not even saying it. It's like, oh, I got to do a show. Well, no, can we cancel the show so I can continue to see what names come up on the internet? And by the way, I haven't seen any yet.
No, I haven't either. And because I think right now, by many, it would be a guessing game.
There's been a couple of guesses on social media. That was yesterday that I got. And I just went, okay, but
if you look at what they do and who they're connected to and their sources and everything else, I mean, their puzzle pieces are much different than ours. We pretty much just have Google and their stories.
This is one of the bad things about broadcasting out of North Texas. We aren't in the Washington loop.
We'll see that. And it goes, this takes me back to the question about the deputy AG. Coming back from that trip, why did that happen so suddenly? Did he know that the story had been leaked to the Post and that story was going to help put the pieces of the puzzle together and would likely expose the informant? And that's why he rushed back for that meeting on Tuesday, to get ahead of it, essentially. When you have the Deputy Attorney General screaming extortion, you know, before that, and which reeks of desperation, and that's exactly what Kimberly Strassel says. That's somebody who's upset that the House of Cards is about to come down.
I'm going to Google, and the only thing is, I found the Wall Street Journal article. Rush Limbaugh was talking about it, but before she wrote the article,
right.
he had asked that, you know, that question was, you know, was who's the informant? Was there a a spy. But that was before she wrote the article tonight around 7 o'clock when that
right.
came out.
Right.
Powerline, the same thing, an FBI informant, but they're just quoting Rush. And then just a few others. That's all I get from Google. It really isn't being covered yet. And it is the Wall Street Journal, which means everybody has seen it.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody has seen it.
No, the story's out there.
Every single major media outlet
it's
knows.
It's only a matter of time.
That, and which
I believe she'll be true to her word, and she's not going to expose it without confirmation. But somebody will.
Yeah, but everybody in the media.
Yeah.
Everybody in the media in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in the mainstream media is trying to figure out who this person is.
And they're going to. And somebody's going to expose the name.
Let's put it this way. I'm heading out in a little bit for Mother's Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised that when I land in Buffalo at about 11 a.m. in the morning this morning.
That we learn the name.
We may not learn the name, but it'll be out there. But I would be surprised if we didn't know it by Monday when we come in for Sunday.
I was saying that to you during the break. It can't go on for too much longer. I mean, you can't hold this. And by the way, the leak to the Post is what helped put that together. That's a Justice Department leak, if that's the case. This is their own doing.
Well, I remember the Washington Post said they didn't get the story from the Department of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then who'd you get it from? Because this had to be somebody who was friendly with the Department of Justice. Why would the Trump... Well, that would be another thing. Why would the Trump administration leak it?
Right.
What would be their angle? Nobody has been able to figure that one out yet.
Mm-hmm.
All right, 866-90-RED-EYE.
When it comes to proper tire care and maintenance, what can you do to improve fuel economy? Jason Evans is Director of Store Operations for GCR Tires and Service, and he tells us.
Fuel economy is certainly something on the top of everybody's mind. So I think the industry in general understands, beginning to understand the importance of things like air pressure. But just to throw an idea out there that maybe not all our listeners hear all the time is check your tread depths. Check your tread depths, particularly on dual wheel positions where tires are bolted together and essentially forced to rotate down the road at the same speed. Because for $2 in your local truck stop, you can find a tread depth gauge. Anything beyond 1/8 of an inch difference, or commonly referred to as 4/32 in the tire industry, between dual positions can really add to rolling resistance. Not only does it add to rolling resistance, it tears up your tires faster. And in a lot of cases, it's a similar condition in terms of a fuel economy as having maybe a brake dragging. That may be a tidbit out there for the listeners to really key in on, because mismatched tread depths on duals can really add to rolling resistance.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary Macker. 866-90-RED-EYE. Yeah, we're just having some fun here, aren't we?
We are. We're just having some fun during the break.
You know, that's why we could never have cameras in the studio.
Yeah.
Because you and I...
No, you can't...
You and I are going through different names and going, look at this person's background.
Uh-oh.
Oh, look at what they did.
Uh-oh.
Oh, and they were high up in the Trump campaign. Maybe this is the informant. You and I.
It's Ivanka. I'm not saying it's Ivanka, but it's Ivanka.
No, it's not Ivanka. That's
just a joke.
Not one of the names that we are looking at.
That's right. No. It's Eric. Eric Trump.
And it's not Rudy Giuliani.
No, not Giuliani.
So it's funny. We're just going back, and we threw out a couple names, and we started doing some research on their backgrounds, going, oh, they did that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they did that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they did that. Oh,
hey,
well, maybe.
Wait a minute. It says they were once a paid informant. No. And I think, we have to be careful there.
No.
Yeah, this is not the case.
That's not the case.
But it's interesting to see this all come together. And the question is, it really is not about if, it's about when we'll learn that name.
I mean,
and then beyond that, because... So here's what also happened during the day Thursday. You had Devin Nunes and Trey Gowdy take a trip over to the Justice Department and look at some of that. Well, actually, it doesn't say. And even, I think, Politico pointed out, they really never say if they got to see, because they issued a joint statement, Nunes and Gowdy, after the visit. They never said whether or not they saw the classified documents that they were talking about. They just said that they were, you know, they had an interesting conversation, a productive discussion, and they will continue. They look forward to continuing that sometime next week. So they didn't say they saw the document. So it was really kind of a, you know, there's nothing to from that story yet, you know, on that front. But did they learn something much bigger and, you know, say that, okay, now we have to look even further? Because remember, this was new information as a couple of weeks ago. This was a new path that they were taking.
They have no fear. Eric Hurley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. If you want to get in, we actually do have a line open, 866-90-RED-EYE. I know we've been blabbing on for a long time, but to me, that's the most interesting story of the day. I mean, there's nothing more interesting than where is the investigation going on the investigation of Donald Trump?
Yeah, well, and it's interesting because I said, you know, in the Politico article that came out before Kimberly Strassel's Thursday evening article at Wall Street Journal, Kyle Chaney writes that it was unclear on the Devin Nunes and Gowdy trip over to the Justice Department. It was unclear whether they were there was a commitment to access those documents. Implying that, you know, maybe he didn't know, at least at the time he wrote the story, whether or not they got to view them. But Kimberly Strassel points out from the Wall Street Journal, and her story coming out a few hours after Kyle's at Politico, points out that, you know, they did see, they were allowed to view the documents. Don't know if she was assuming that they were, or if that actually happened, and she knows for sure that they did. Because my question would be then, what comes of that? If they're learning this, and they're learning maybe who this person was, who this informant was, and they know it. You made the point during the break. That means the president knows it.
Yeah, and I think we brought this up briefly yesterday, that if the president knows it and hasn't gone crazy over it, well, then either it isn't as damaging as you would think, or he realizes this is the end of it, and he can just confidently say there's nothing here and let this thing, you know, let this whole thing
just fizzle out and play out naturally.
Just play out naturally. But if, let's put it this way, if Kimberly Strassel believes she knows and the Wall Street Journal editors believe that they know, and I'm going to guess by tomorrow at this time or when I get off the plane in New York before noon tomorrow, others will be saying, well, we believe we know who it is, too, because there isn't probably. Look, when there, this is like a mystery novel.
Mm-hmm.
It really has got to have everybody. You, if you have any type of journalist instinct, no matter how biased you are, you're asking yourself, who is it? Who is this informant who they claim they know it is, that Kimberly Strassel is saying is just, you know, is just scratching the surface. And so if she knows who it is, then it's not some unknown person who was in the low-level portion of the Trump campaign. It's a name that we probably all know.
Yes. Because otherwise you wouldn't get that. You wouldn't have any information. There would be no value to your serving as an informant. I mean, you have to have that top-level information. So you either had access to it or you were at that top level.
So if she believes she knows who it is, the editors of the Wall Street Journal believe they know who it is, can almost guarantee the president knows who it is. Therefore, if the president knows who the informant is, even if it is still top secret.
Right.
Okay, and they're all talking about the same person, and they, and they, you know, they believe that, you know, this is, and the president would know who it is without question. And the informant was somebody inside of the Trump campaign. Well, then it would probably, in all likelihood, be somebody who is no longer with the administration. One would guess. I would guess that probably with the leaks that have come out of the Trump administration, that if the president or anyone in his administration know or believe they know who the informant is, and since the justice went to the White House, they had to show him the information, right?
Yeah.
Well, if this person was an informant inside the campaign of Donald Trump, I can almost guarantee that person is not with the Trump administration.
Right.
So I guess that's one place you could start, as we did.
Well, that's a pretty long list of people who were with the administration or campaign and are no longer with them. But I think it's only logical that that person was either at a high level or had access to someone at a high level in the campaign. Otherwise, the value to the information, that's the only way you get the real information. If you're an informant.
Unless that's all they could get was in low level, and that's where the Papadopoulos thing, might have been where, you know, part of that came from or hyped it up, and therefore it's not a big deal.
Mm.
We don't know. But then again, I don't know the name. Kimberly Strassel knows the name. She claims she knows the name. Wall Street Journal believes they know. The other editors, in there, because that was their editorial piece yesterday, they said they believe they know who it is. She says she believes she knows who it is from other sources outside the intelligence community. Somehow she's put it together, but she can't identify it because it would be irresponsible unless her sources inside the intelligence community verify it, and they have not done that for her. So, again, that could change the whole thing. We're merely speculating how it could go either way.
Right.
Because we don't know the name.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty big mystery, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, a million questions, and my mind keeps coming up with more every time we, you know, go a little bit further down the rabbit hole, you know, and because you examine this. And as you said, it could be anything from really nothing. And Kimberly Strassel is somebody that's obviously in the know. So she's going to know a lot of names that we wouldn't know. We wouldn't remember anybody, you know, and assuming it was for theory that it's this low-level person. Well, she might know who it is, and it's still a low-level person. It's not a household name. It's not somebody we all know. Or it could be.
But what's interesting is the fact that if she knows the name and her conclusion is this is just scratching the surface of the scandal that exists here, that's what I find intriguing. Because I've said, if it was somebody just low level and all they got was they really got nothing out of the, they didn't get anything out of this source, correct?
Well,
I mean, they still don't have anything today.
Assuming there was something from that source. They took it and they ran with it and they continued the investigation. You would think that source was delivering something again that would deliver enough for an indictment by now, right? At a higher level than what we're seeing, you know, with the stuff that's not even related to
after all this time,
the election. Yeah, you would think something, not Trump necessarily, but somebody being indicted.
And in case you're just listening, for us, it's like almost like a puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the Kimberly Strassel's column in the Wall Street Journal last night about the FBI source. Did the FBI engage in outright spying against the 2016 Trump campaign? And this is all about the Deputy Attorney General. Remember, he said that the Congress is extorting him because they wanted information. They believe would add to evidence in their investigation of the FBI. And apparently they got a name, as Kimberly Strassel is saying, they got a name. And the whole point is this is a longtime informant. And what she is saying is this is leading to the point in asking the question, did they have a paid spy inside the Trump campaign? Basically, and was there a paid spy, and when did this spy come into the Trump campaign? Because they said, again, by the language that they've used, a long-term informant. Well, this wasn't the first one, and so was it part? Somebody was part of the campaign, somebody who wasn't. Now, the big part of the story is, as she says, I believe I know the name of the informant, but my intelligence sources did not provide it to me, and they refused to confirm it.
Which means that she cannot, you know, therefore she cannot release the name.
Well, they didn't, remember, they refused to confirm it.
Right.
They didn't say no.
Mm-hmm.
That's not it. They refused to confirm it. Therefore, it would be irresponsible to publish it. But what is clear is we barely scratched the surface of the FBI's 2016 behavior, and the country will never get the straight story until President Trump moves to declassify everything possible. It's time to rip off the Band-Aid.
So you just hit something. That's how she knows. If she, because she says she believes she knows. Ask the question. We can't confirm that. But you're not denying it.
Not denying it.
Because the denial would be, you know, your theory or your guess would be up in smoke. It'd be, okay, that's, it's not that person.
Right.
Which would basically, by not confirming it, and also not denying it, but more importantly, not denying
Look,
it, you are confirming it unofficially, which really is the whole point.
I mean, this would be a great movie,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
you don't have to and you don't have to say based on a true story and add anything.
Just write it the way it happened.
Right.
Do the story the way it happened. Don't embellish one thing. Because we asked the question earlier, was it based on political motivation purely and not a real investigation?
Or was it never intended to be an investigation?
Make it
was
look it just like an investigation.
You use the investigative arm of the FBI.
You set it up
to find,
and you use that and to find dirt on your opponent.
And then get that dirt out and spread it. Because remember, that's what, I can't think of her name again from the Pentagon.
Farkas, Evelyn Farkas.
Evelyn Farkas, when she never can remember her name for some reason. When she came out and she said, look, our goal was to get to open up all the intelligence agencies to get this information out, to do whatever we could to what? Destroy the legitimacy of the incoming president. Well, they knew. Comey knew it was unverified. So they didn't care whether it was unverified or not. They just wanted to get it out, and everybody wished to get it out, as she was stating.
Yeah.
Which means law enforcement, the upper echelons of law enforcement and the Department of Justice of the Obama administration wanted to get it out, even though they knew it wasn't verified. So that's my entire point, that when you go back to it, that maybe this informant was in there. Maybe everything was never, ever originally based on an investigation, but was based on the fact that, you know, we can't have Trump as president. And the other thing is, does it go to the fact that not only was there an informant in the Trump campaign, but if it happened prior to July 16 and this person was embedded already in the campaign before the primaries were over? I mean, you can go all the way back. Remember, Rand Paul said, I'm wondering whether there, you know, I was being monitored also.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, knowing what we already know is what they have done. Who knows how much further they would have gone? And we don't know the answer to that at this moment. All we know are there are a lot of people that are much more in the know than we are that seem to be hot on the trail of something. And that's a great point. We called for it a little while back, saying the president needs to start declassifying a lot of this material.
Right.
That he knows is not about national security. He needs to start doing it. He has the power to do it.
And let the process do the work. Let the process play out naturally.
Because you really
everybody
can't.
Asks the question, why not fire Mueller? Why not fire Sessions? Why not fire Rosenstein? Why not? The best thing, if this is headed in that direction of a terrific, large, very giant abuse of power, then you sit back and you let it happen naturally. Because again, he doesn't sound like somebody who is and doesn't appear to be and isn't acting like somebody who is desperate or afraid that something about him is going to be found out.
Unless they're saying, look, don't interfere at all. Don't declassify.
Right.
Just let it run its natural course. That way you're hands off completely.
Right.
None of your political enemies can say, well, he declassified only what he wanted to do because what he wanted out, mm-hmm. that would be right. the accusation, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he's just saying, just let it go. Mm-hmm. Who knows? All right, if you want to get in.
We know he has the ability to do things, and he's not doing them. The question is why?
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE, if you would like to get in on the show. Okay, so.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to watch
and
this.
And by the way,
weekend.
We're not going to get into a name guessing about who the informant
is. No. We're not going to engage with that.
So, just so people
it's,
know.
It's not responsible.
People are calling in.
If it's divulged by another media group, and people start throwing names around, you know, they choose to do that, then fine, they can do that. I'm not going to do that. It's not responsible to do because you get it wrong. You're accusing somebody of something, you know, huge, and that's not responsible.
Right.
Which is exactly, you know, what the point Kimberly Strassel was making. Because none of us have an idea. And throwing the spaghetti at the wall to see what sticks isn't the way you do this.
Right.
But at some point, we are going to learn. It's just a matter of when.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Other news out there. This is really interesting because we actually captured the five most wanted leaders of ISIS.
Mm.
And we got them through smartphones. This from the Daily Mail UK, not something that was hugely covered in the American media.
Right.
They're not biased, though. I want to make this clear. This jubilant President Trump tweeted on Thursday to announce that five of the most wanted leaders of ISIS have been captured after they were lured from Syria to Iraq with fake Telegram messages. Iraqi officials used the cell phone of an already captured ISIS lieutenant to send instructions via an app for the four other leaders to come to Iraq where they were captured. The encrypted app was officially named by ISIS as one of its favored mobile messaging services in 2015 and had been regularly used by the terrorist group for private communication and to spread propaganda.
Well, this just happened on the TV show Homeland. They found how they were communicating online and basically called in all the operatives. They were Russian spies on Homeland. That's pretty wild.
Matt?
Yep. Wow.
This guy was captured in February by Turkish intelligence and handed over to the Iraqi.
Mm-hmm.
So they got the five most wanted leaders
of
ISIS.
Using
an app.
Wow. Where do you You go to the app store for all the terrorist apps. I don't know where are the good ones.
And this seems quite simple, but you know, you and I've always asked the big picture about, you know, the things that we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we always hear that, you know, that the cyber threat from, remember the cyber threat from North Korea, cyber threat from Russians, cyber threat from China. And you and I've always asked the question, well, what's the cyber threat from America?
Right.
When you think about it, I mean, is there anybody as high tech as we are that probably has the best use of sophisticated equipment? If we want to create cyber terror, we can.
In terms of the scale, we're bigger. I mean, Japan probably has the same technology, and you know, and I mean, in many nations too. But in terms of the scale of it, we would have, I think, the greater effect in that regard. Yeah.
I just wonder what we have there. It's not talked about much. We always talk about the cyber threats elsewhere, but I'm sure the United States, maybe through backdoor channels, makes it known to countries that may want to do it against the United States, the potential of what we could do to their society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's never really talked about, but I wonder, those messages have to be communicated.
Well, you know, with the NSA fallout and the mining of the metadata in that regard, who knows what's been developed even since then, and what they use and how they put those patterns together, and or you know, something like this, where you have an app and you're basically, it's a way for you to getting into their communications, finding out who they are, discovering who they are. That to me is just amazing. Because you know it's on a grand, you know there's a lot of, in the intelligence world, there's a lot being used in order to nab somebody or a group of people. No doubt.
This actually seems quite simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you find how they're communicating.
Right. And it's encrypted, but you break the code.
You crack it and you get in, and once you've hacked into it, you're pretty much able to communicate as they do, as one of them.
You don't hear much about ISIS these days, do you?
Well, you don't. You know what's interesting too is that I was thinking about it yesterday with the whole North Korea thing coming together. Apparently June 12th will be the summit in Singapore between the president and Kim Jong-un. So we look at the messages being sent to Kim Jong-un, and I go back to the Moab in eastern Afghanistan. And when we dropped that, I believe that was something that the president, a very clear and loud message, sending not just to, you know, ISIS or terrorists in that region, but I think to Kim Jong-un. We're willing to go after the enemy, and we're willing mm-hmm. to strike when necessary. You know, and the president promoting diplomacy yesterday, and certainly I think everybody would vote diplomacy over war, but he said, well, you know, going to war you know, is a sign of weakness. Well, not necessarily. It's sometimes a sign of strength. It's a sign that you know something has to be done and you do it, regardless of how awful war is. It is at times necessary.
By the way, this just popped into my head when we're, you know, talking about ISIS mm-hmm. and Islamic fanatics,
right?
And I was just thinking, I saw the headline the other day from, the Roseanne, and I thought it was Roseanne in real life. It said, Roseanne scared of her Muslim neighbors that are moving in. And I thought it was in real life.
Oh, it was from the show. That was the storyline in the show.
That's a storyline in the show. I'm just like, but it had me for a moment. In fact, I just did it now, and I can see her. There she is. I see the still picture of her and her sister, Jackie. Boy, that Jackie's... I only saw the first episode with Jackie, and she's... Mm-hmm.
Lori Metcalf.
Lori Metcalf, mm-hmm. Yeah. She's wearing the vagina hat and all that. And I don't think, wait a minute, I don't think Jackie didn't vote for
Hillary. No, she voted for
Jill Stein. Jill Stein. Yeah, she voted for Jill Stein. Mm-hmm. Yes. So Jackie voted for, so that was. But I never watched past episode one, did you? Did you ever see episode one?
I never saw episode one. No.
Neither did I. It was like, okay, been there. Now, is Last Man Standing coming back?
The only thing that we know is that they
Fox Tim was Allen, interested.
Tim Allen has tweeted about it, said, you know, there's a good chance, there's a decent chance. That's what was implied. But, yeah, apparently the rumor is that Fox wants to pick it up.
I've never watched a full episode of that show.
Yeah, I haven't either. I mean, what I saw, it looked very funny.
Oh, it did. But, it did look fun. When I was on the other day, it was like, oh, let me just go buy it. And I was getting ready to go to sleep, and I watched like 5 minutes of it. And it was funny, but none of it was political at all.
Yeah. He has one of those new 700-horsepower cars, Tim Allen. He talks about the...
In the show or in real life?
No, in real life, okay. He owns one. He's a car enthusiast, and there was a moment when they had done a couple of things that happened. The Santa Claus, the movie, mm-hmm. did really well on opening weekend, and he was still doing the show Home Improvement. So he shows up at the lot after opening weekend of the Santa Claus for work on Home Improvement, and somebody's in his parking space. And he goes inside. He's about to throw a fit, and it was the CEO of Disney that left him a gift. A Celine Mustang, and put it in his parking space. Eisner did that, apparently.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know that anyone should ever put me inside of a 700-horsepower car, by the way, behind the wheel. I have no business driving that car.
I'm trying to think of what our Ford Fairlane GTA was. That was 390 cubic inches. Mm. What kind of horsepower was that putting out?
Yeah,
that was
a long time ago. I don't know, but... Yeah,
700 horsepower.
Would be, you know.
Well, a couple of cars passed me on the highway tonight, on the tollway tonight.
Well, some of the larger...
They were about 600 horsepower because they must have come flying by me at 110.
Well, it's, some of the Class A trucks out there have, what, 625, I think.
Oh, you know, by the way, you know how I always say that we live in a nation that my dad always said we want to be BS'd?
Mm-hmm.
I have evidence of that.
Mm-hmm.
I looked in my new truck the other day.
Mm-hmm.
The speedometer goes up to 160 miles an hour.
Right.
It can't go 160 miles an hour. There's no way that vehicle goes 160
Only
miles an hour.
Only one way to find out.
With 187 horsepower.
Only one way to find out.
I saw that. I burst out loud.
Let's call Eddie Gossage out at TMS at Texas Motor Speedway.
and go out there.
Hey, you got about 10 minutes, Eddie. Can we get in for about 10 minutes?
Did I ever tell you the story when I used to race the legend cars out there and flipped? Mm. Flipped like five times.
Really? You flipped a car?
Flipped a car, yeah. Flipped the legend car. Coming around a corner. Was racing one of our old news guys. Mm-hmm. It was like the Thursday night races, and we had to go out there and practice and do all that. And,
right.
And I came, and I had the slower car, and I knew it. And I tried just two of us in this, you know, heat race, and I clip his. There's no way I can pass him. I cannot. The only way I can get him is in the corner and try to. And so I tried to get around him going fast, and my front wheel clipped his back wheel, and I just went and started rolling. And it was about the last time I ever raced him. And as I am flipping over, and you're really tight in the seat, but as I'm flipping, I mean, this thing's flipping. You know, side, just not end over end, but side, you know, flipping side to side. And probably five times it did it. And in the middle of it, my only thought was, please don't let a piece of metal come and decapitate me. It'll kill my mother.
She'll be really upset.
It's Mother's Day. And I'm thinking, no, it just don't. I just, that's the thought that went through my head.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally I came out and the car, you know, landed on its wheels. And the other guy had spun out, and he looked at me like, are you okay? And I put thumbs up, and we started racing again. And the car was still going, and I took off, and I had a flat. But I had a flat, and I came rolling, and there was, it was like Thursday night, they had about 20,000 people out there just in the one part of the grandstand of all of Texas Motor Speedway, and I'm limping across it, and all these people are up there cheering for me.
That you got through on the flat.
Yeah!
You made it. You finally completed.
So, yeah. So that was, that's my only thing of car racing, so I actually, I did it out there.
You got to take your car out there and see if it'll do 160.
No, I don't think so.
Can I do it?
No. I pay too much for insurance. For an old guy, I pay still pay too much for insurance.
Dang it.
Must be the liability. As soon as you get assets, you got to get more liability.
It's actually the area we live in. Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. It's the amount of traffic that you would engage on the average. That's how they do that. I have a family member who lives out in the country. They don't pay. I don't think they pay a fourth of what I pay.
It is expensive.
Yeah.
In Dallas, it really is.
Yeah.
All right, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Tonight Radio, he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. I like the story, and we'll have more of it coming up following the bottom of the hour, that California will mandate solar panels on new homes.
Yay! Let's raise the cost of houses again unnecessarily. You know what they don't say? Because these would be new builds, and they would have to either have a panel on the roof or be buying part of essentially what is a kind of a co-op thing, buying solar energy.
Right.
What I don't know, I haven't gotten into the how they voted. I know how they voted, but the details of it, and that is, if you've got the solar panel on the house, are you forced to use it?
Well, you couldn't come up with a more inefficient way to power homes.
So here's my question, too. That solar panel is not going to last forever.
No, it does not.
Are you required to replace the solar panel if it becomes inoperative? Are you required, therefore, to also prove that it's functioning properly?
Here's another question. Since nobody can really afford to build a new home in California, does it really matter?
Well, it's adding thousands of dollars to the cost of a new home. They said anywhere from $8,000 to $10,000. By the way, I think that's low estimate.
Well, I saw the New York Times said $8,000 to $12,000.
Right.
I saw $25,000 to $50,000 the other day.
I knew the New York Times story, and a lot of people are actually pointing to the New York Times story. Yes. But then even the New York Times story asked some questions. What about low and middle income? Because you're pricing it more and more. Housing for low and middle income families in California is becoming something unobtainable. They can't do it. They can't get it. And so what are you doing here? Effectively, how do you do this without pricing out low and middle income individuals when it comes to new homes? I mean, I knew that 8 to 12 number is low.
Well, but it's stupid. By doing that, by having every home having to have a system, you, number one, have to produce all those materials for all those new homes.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same reason every home doesn't have a windmill. It's the same reason that every home isn't powered by their own natural gas generator.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's much more cheaper and much more efficient to have a central location to produce all the power much more efficiently and distribute it via a grid.
Right. Yeah.
And so you're actually contributing more to climate change. You're not doing anything to solve the problem.
No, it really is meaningless. It often is. You appear to be doing something. It's pioneering. Oh, by the way, the Times story they were, you know, that they actually did say that the, you know, this is a bold move or something that's pioneering, or, but they said, they asked the question, how did you get around the legislators on this? Because it's not the legislators that did it.
Yeah, it says the New York Times called California a trendsetter.
Yes, there you go. That's what they use.
By the way, trendsetter doesn't mean it's good.
No.
Trendsetter could be, for the Times,
it probably was supposed to be accolades. But
they expressed surprise that such a costly rule would be approved outside of the legislative process by the commission with little debate.
Right.
It will add thousands of dollars to the cost of a home, and the shortage of affordable housing is one of California's most pressing issues, the Times reported. That made the relative ease of its approval in a unanimous vote by the 5-member California Energy Commission before a standing room crowd with little debate all that more remarkable. The cost to consumers already in on the market for a new home is $565,000.
That's the median price of a home in California.
Yes.
Wow.
Yep. Said Massachusetts of Institute Technology magazine, James Temple, writing for them, a solar panel on every house might sound good, but it's not smart climate policy.
For Video Road Log, here's your forecast.
Snowmelt is fueling moderate to major river flooding in northern Washington and western Montana for at least the next few days. Other parts of the northern Rockies could experience snowmelt flooding as well. Over the next 7 days, a wet pattern continues for the Midwest. Iowa, Illinois, Ohio will see over an inch of rain for the week ahead. The southern third of the nation will be mainly dry, with the exception of Florida, where afternoon thunderstorms will abound. As we wrap up the last day of the work week, we will see patchy showers in Los Angeles, high today 70. If you'll be traveling in or out of Las Vegas or in the I-15 area, you'll want to be aware of a forecast for blowing dust today. It'll be breezy with 35-mile-an-hour winds. High today in Vegas, 93. Dallas will be windy, not quite that strong. High today, 90. Chicago, thunderstorms, 57. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
The Bonus Show.
And he's Eric Curley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to Ken in Athens, Alabama, about California's solar panel mandate for new homes. Ken, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, fellas, how y'all doing tonight?
Very good.
All right. Well, summer finally got here in Alabama. It finally warmed up.
Here too.
Yeah, I got an issue with the solar panel things. Solar panels do have a purpose. I had an off-grid cabin in Tennessee, and I ran it out of a 50-watt solar panel, ran all my lights and my pumps and all that, and it worked great. Never did have a bit of problem. Now, you can use a solar panel to power your 110 in your house very easily, because if you think about it, the biggest draws on your electricity is hot water heaters, electric appliances like your air conditioning and all that. But a couple of solar panels and a couple of batteries and probably about a 1,500-watt inverter would be able to run all of your 110 in your house, and that's the majority of your usage.
I don't understand the point. What point are you getting to? We know this. That's got nothing to do with the government mandating solar panels for new homes. It's a bad idea.
Ken made a choice, not the government.
Right.
Go ahead.
To run the whole home, yes, it is. But they do have their use for 110.
Let the consumer make the choice.
Right, nobody's making that argument on this show. Right. Nobody made that argument.
Okay, I understand that. But it is California, and they do anything they want out there. They come up with some of the most harebrained things. I just don't understand it.
I have solar panel garden lights, and they're very good. I don't have to hook up a system to do it, and they're very, 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 very cheap to buy.
Yeah.
I made the choice to do that. to decide that all new homes in California, and this is the point that they wish to get to, is that all new homes in California, and therefore all homes, should have solar panels because that's an efficient way to produce electricity for a society, is absolutely absurd.
Yeah, this, by the way, with all these homes built starting in January of 2020.
Right. We're not saying it can't. Right. We're not saying it can't be done. Of course, it can be done.
You can do with your property what you want to. When the government starts saying that you must supply some of the energy with this, that's where I draw the line.
Right. We could say that we don't need jet airplanes and we simply run steam trains because it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
Whether the fact that it can be done does not mean it is the preferred way of the consumer or the choice of what the consumer would want or what's best for society when it comes to the economy and producing a service at competitive prices.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't do anything to solve their perceived global warming problem. In fact, it makes it worse, as we've talked about. With solar farms, when we've talked about wind farms, they all have to be backed up by the traditional energy systems that exist out there in order to be dependable. And when you do that, that means you have to build a totally new infrastructure, which means what? You burn carbon gases in order to do that, and you have an unnecessary redundancy. That's our point. It's not that things can't be done.
Let the consumer drive it.
It's doing things in an efficient and productive manner.
And that's where the efficiencies are created in that demand. Because if there is a building demand, then you will see these companies working to supply the market, right? Now, sometimes they can also compete to get the technology as efficient as possible in order to make it more amenable to the market. Price-wise, competition-wise, it's really right now not even a game. It's not even on, you know, on the radar, relatively speaking. When they create a greater efficiency with them, a much lower cost, great. Then the consumer will drive it.
The consumer will.
You'll
decide.
Know when you'll see the advertising everywhere for that, because that will be the turning point. That will be the threshold that we cross. That starts getting us to that point. Keep in mind, in the past, what you've heard is, under my plan of cap and trade, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Well, that president went out to create such policies, and he didn't need Congress to do it. He did it through executive orders that essentially drove the coal industry out of business, in part, and also drove up energy prices. That was his plan. He promised to do that. And if that's the kind of government you want in your life, then vote that way. No thank you for me. Ain't going to do it.
One thing we didn't discuss, you see that Connecticut joined, and I can't think of the name of it right now, they joined the group of states, I believe they're all Democrat states, that want to bypass the Electoral College.
Mm.
You see that?
Right. Yeah.
Did you see where they're... Where, and it's funny because, like, these small states like Connecticut, who, joined the Union and, were part of the, formation of the United States of America, their representatives absolutely wanted the Electoral College because they knew a small state like Connecticut would lose any of their power.
Right.
Because, and so this whole plan from these Democrat states is to get as many Democrat states that they get up to 270 electoral votes.
Mm-hmm.
And then their state will vote by whatever the popular opinion is of the entire country. That's how their state will go, even if their state votes for the other candidate.
Yeah.
That they would agree that, which, again, is putting the power in a few states. And this is where liberals just don't think. Because 50 years from now, when California keeps losing people and Texas keeps getting bigger, then Texas will have much more of a control over the direction of your country. And at that point, do you still want that to happen? Or do you still do you still want the Electoral College? I would ask this of Connecticut. If that's the case, are you willing to give up and have proportional senators? If you don't believe in the Electoral College, you don't believe in the Senate.
Right.
The Senate has to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Senate is the same basis of thought as the Electoral College, to give the smaller states a, you know, because if you think anybody's ever going to visit Connecticut ever, or Pennsylvania ever, or Michigan ever, or Wisconsin ever, if it's a popular vote? No.
Well,
so that's not going to happen. But if you don't believe in the Electoral College, you don't believe in the Senate. Get rid of the Senate. Then all the power of the federal government will be from the large population centers, which would be New York, California, and Texas.
And what happens when you start taking that away from the people of your state?
When they don't feel that they're represented, then they get angry.
Which means then you lose.
Then you lose.
State level.
Right, exactly.
I mean, the change would come about very quickly.
Well, could you imagine all of a sudden a Republican wins the popular vote, and your state, which small state voted completely Democrat, you have to throw your backing behind.
I mean, because that basically on a map, when you're going to put it up on, you know, CNN on election night, it's going to be a red state.
Reds, exactly.
Good luck.
Now they said there's still huge court issues, that the Constitution of the United States would strictly forbid that. I just wonder how you figure out that precedent, but the precedent is clear. They wanted each state to determine, you know, by their legislature to determine, you know, either by the legislature voting or whatever way they want to come up with that, what that state wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you take it to the point that the state wants what the entire country wants,
right,
well, then you're not saying what the state wants. It takes the power away from the actual states. Interesting, I saw a meme the other day. It's a great meme. It said, the states form the federal government. The federal government didn't form the states.
Yeah, that's accurate.
And so when I saw that for the Electoral College, that Connecticut's now on board, I'm like, what a bunch of fools.
Well, because they think they're being innovative. I mean, I think the constitutional challenge would be very clear in the courts. You know, I just don't think this is going to happen. But just the thought of it, just the talking about it, they think they're being innovative. They think this is because look at what the Democrats, what the liberals believe. The Constitution is a dated, sorry, that was then, this is now. Well, be careful when you start changing the Constitution of the U.S. or ignoring it.
Well, I'm not surprised, again, when we see the poll taken again, where the majority of Americans still have no idea about the separation of powers. Mm-hmm. They can't name the three branches of government.
Mm-hmm.
They really have no idea why we exist. Think about this. You live in a society where the majority of people have no reason, don't have any clue as to why we really exist as a nation and what makes us different from others.
Well, when your population is willfully ignorant and you know that, that gives you leverage. That gives you power because you can do what you want to do. You don't have to abide by the Constitution. You can go out I don't want to say experiment, but that's essentially what they're trying to do. They really believe that they can change the fundamental values of a nation.
By the way, they never really got around the tax thing with Obama or with Trump, did they?
No.
Remember, they were all talking about New York, how we're going to get around, we're going to bypass.
Right.
They never were able to do that.
Well,
were they?
Because you can't.
Yeah.
You know, it, without greatly taxing and regulating your own people, and good luck with that. You've already done that, which is part of the problem in your state, New York and California. You take away the cost of government in those states, you get it down to where it is, even on the average of some of the lower government cost states. And just imagine how those states would thrive. But no, they don't see it that way. You must be controlled, which means you must be taxed and regulated,
you know,
to the point of, we're going to make you put a solar panel on your home, whether you want it there or not.
And I wonder what it would be. Has a poll? I got to see if there's a poll that's been done this week on that, because I really wonder what the polls would be of the citizens of California. Well, we remember gay marriage.
Mm-hmm. Twice.
Gay marriage went down to defeat twice. Mm-hmm. And the court said, no, what the people think doesn't matter.
Right.
So on this, I really wonder what the people of California think. I'm going to check to see if there's been a poll done. If there hasn't been, there will be, I'm sure, this week.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. Yeah.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Mother's Day this weekend.
What?
And thank you, Eric, for Erica's. I was able to get a very early flight out, and so Eric is allowing me to leave a little bit early here to go and see my mom. Yeah. I'll be back Sunday morning, so it's a very quick trip in.
The Secretary of State is flying you to Buffalo. You'll be landing on the tarmac. The Vice President and the President will be there in Buffalo to greet you.
No, but otherwise I can't get in until real late, and I was able to get a very early flight. And so,
yeah,
it's great to see Mom. I mean, Mom, the advice that she gave me, which for this business.
Get out of radio.
Well, she said if you ever take anything personal, get out now. Don't get in it. I'm telling you now, don't take anything. And she didn't know I was ever going to be a talk show host.
Yeah. Right.
And then when I was a talk show host in the town that she lives in, she'd be my biggest defender. How dare they? I said, Mom, remember, don't take it personal.
Yeah.
I'm your mother. I can. They're doing they're in their 90s now. So,
yeah.
And they're healthy and they're doing great. And so just to be able to have the opportunity to go and see them. But just like, your mom, Eric, my mom just, means everything to me. I mean,
course,
she was, she was the one that told me when I was just totally frustrated with this business, when people were trying to mold you in a certain way.
Right.
She said, you got to this point by doing what you want to do. If you don't like it anymore, get out. But if you're going to do it, what you wish to do.
Well, and that's it, which is great. And that's the wisdom of a mom. You got to love it. And, if I think both of us can easily, I can speak for you easily here. We both love what we do.
Yes.
You can. I'll be seeing my mom this weekend as well. For me, it's just a 2-hour road trip. So hop in the vehicle and I'll go. And my mother-in-law lives in the same town. So my wife and I will have our date day is always Saturday. Mm-hmm. So my wife and I, that's really the only time we get together. Because of the opposite schedule, so we'll probably stop at a barbecue restaurant on the way back, and have dinner. But we'll take our moms to lunch and have a good time. It should be a really good day. How's the weather in Buffalo?
It's going to be
high.
It was. They had 80 this week, but when I'm in, the high is going to be 62, 63.
Oh,
low in the 40s.
Yeah, yeah.
So
as they call it, summer.
Well, winter in Texas.
Winter in Texas, summer in Buffalo.
Yeah.
Well, good. My best to your family, and happy Mother's Day to your mom and all the moms.
Happy Mom's Day to your mom, too.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.